Hello, I'm Carly Beaumont. This is number 0295, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0295. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Philip Cutler, founder and CEO of GradeSlam, a 24/7 online tutoring service.
We're not reinventing the wheel when it comes to tutoring. What we've really done, though, is said, okay, with what exists now technologically, how can we make the whole process of tutoring that much easier, that much more seamless? And the truth is, people, when they want something, they want it now. I mean, my generation and students in high school now, they don't want to wait for a tutor to come to their home a few days later. When they want something, they want it now, and they want it on demand. And GradeSlam Now's principle is to give you that tutor that you want right when you want it.
Psychotherapist Lynetta Williams on the topic of mental health.
I think that building literacy and understanding, even if it's just going online, reading something about mental health, as you're getting to know your physical health a little bit better, we can also explore just what is bipolarism, what is depression. We hear different terms. There's so many different resources online that you're able to tap into, but it's very applicable to be able to start there.
Michael McClooney, creator of the app Incubate, which allows you to leave a message for someone as far as 25 years into the future. Where did this idea come from?
It came from listening to a very good friend of mine whose wife just had triplets, and his life was very, very hectic, to say the least. And he was relaying to me some very hilarious stories. I was actually encouraging him to capture these moments for his kids and for his loved ones and things like that. And once they were, you know, far enough into the future that his kids could understand and appreciate these things, their 16th birthday, 18th birthday, 21st birthday, things like that, they were 3 months at the time, that if he could capture those moments instantly and send them to the future, knowing that his kids would get them one day, that would change his life.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0295 was Carly Beaumont, a writer, director, and freelance photographer. She also has a couple of podcasts you can check out. One of them is called That Pop, This Life, which looks at pop culture, and another one is called Talking Shondaland, which covers the latest Shonda Rhimes TV shows. And you'll find the links to Carly's sites and her podcasts on this week's What's On page, which you just heard Carly mention, 0295. And thank you very much, Carly, for doing the guest slate on this program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Police in Florida said a man arrested for aiming a laser pointer at motorists was found to be concealing a bag of suspected marijuana in his rectum. Ormond Beach police said officers investigating a report of a person shining a laser pointer at a woman's face while she was driving determined that 27-year-old Jesse Ropke had aimed his laser at a woman and multiple other drivers while he was a passenger in a car driven by his girlfriend, 28-year-old Brandy Tate. Police said Ropke, who told officers he was just having fun with the laser pointer and didn't know shining it at motorists was illegal, had a smoking device that smelled like marijuana in his possession. The suspect was taken to the Volusia County Jail, where officers conducting a strip search said a bag of a leafy green substance fell out of his rectum. The contents of the bag smelled like marijuana, police said. Someone actually sniffed that bag after they took it out of his... Anyway. Ropke was charged with pointing a laser at a driver or pilot, possession or use of narcotic paraphernalia, possession of marijuana, and smuggling contraband into a prison. Well, he's just an ass in so many ways, isn't he? And elsewhere, Australian authorities said a man was hospitalized after he drunkenly ate a glass beer bottle during a family gathering. Northern Territory Police Superintendent Louise Jorgensen said police received an emergency call just after 9 p.m. Wednesday about a man at a family gathering in Waggaman who chewed and swallowed a glass beer bottle and then went for a lie down. His family then called police and an ambulance, and he was taken to Royal Darwin Hospital. Oh, how fitting. Yes. Jorgensen went on to say that the call was one of 500 made to police between 3 p.m. and 11 p.m. that day. She said drunken hijinks, such as the bottle-eating man, are a drain on police resources. People are dismayed when we can't respond to their jobs immediately, but this is why, because of all the other jobs that are coming in, she said. We got 500 calls that evening and about 450 the day before, Jorgensen said. Most of them are domestics or antisocial and drunk behavior. Yeah, well, I just have to ask, how drunk do you have to be to actually want to eat the bottle? That's got to be some serious beer. Meanwhile, a philandering Chinese man who secretly had 17 girlfriends was exposed to all of his paramours when they arrived at the same time to visit him in the hospital. The Changsha man, identified by the surname Huan, was hospitalized March 24th with a non-life-threatening injury from a car accident, and doctors got in contact with a number of people they believed to be family members. However, the 17 people who turned up at the hospital were revealed to be Huan's girlfriends, who were unaware of each other's existence until they all arrived at the hospital at the same time. A girlfriend who identified herself as Zhao Li said she has spoken with several of the other women and discovered many of them had been regularly giving him money. She said one of the women had been supporting him financially for 9 years. Huan, who also allegedly fabricated his educational background to get a job with a large company, is facing a fraud charge after he allegedly billed his ex-wife of more than $40,000. So if I guess you add the ex-wife, that makes it 18. Well, okay, what I want to know is, even if he had a large, legitimate family, why would the hospital need to contact 17 different people? I mean, I don't get it. You go through somebody's wallet, you find information that says, call next of kin. You don't call 17 people, even if there are 17 people there. You call one or two and you figure they will call the others. It's just a bizarre story. Anyway, finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, while thousands of Japanese women accept commercial porno movie roles, only a dwindling number of males, by one estimate, only 30 industry-wide, are available to pair with them. They're stallions on call, according to one producer. That makes the undisputed king of Japanese porn 35-year-old Shimiken. And he is in such demand that he works as many as 6 movies a day with few days off. His resume, according to a double entendre-laden March profile in Details magazine, includes 7,000 films with at least 7,500 co-stars, including once 72-year-old twins. Let me repeat that. 72-year-old twins. Together, they add up to 144. To maintain his vigor, he hits the gym fanatically and downs mineral supplements and complex amino acids, but, no Viagra. I haven't had to use it, he said, adding with a pause, yet. Well, guys, if you're out of work somewhere in the world, apparently there's an opening for you in Japan. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? GradeSlam is a Canadian edtech company that has just launched the first ever on-demand, one-on-one online tutoring service. It's called GradeSlam Now, and Philip Cutler is the founder and CEO of GradeSlam, and he joins us on the line right now from right here in Montreal. Hi, Philip.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Right off the bat, I got to ask, going back, were you the tutor or the tutored when you were growing up?
I sort of did a little bit of both. I mean, my background is in education. So actually, my experience with tutoring and teaching really started in university. You know, obviously, I was a student growing up, but I never really had formal tutoring from a tutor, nor was I really the tutor until I was actually teaching in university.
You know, when technology comes up with something like this, often, because technology has been around for a while, obviously, often people start saying, gee, why wasn't this done before? What gave you guys the idea to do this? It sounds like a great idea.
So, the reality is what you said is true, that technology has really sort of changed the way we can communicate. And I think that that's really the biggest change in what we're doing with GradeSlam now. We're not reinventing the wheel when it comes to tutoring. What we've really done, though, is said, okay, with what exists now technologically, how can we make the whole process of tutoring that much easier, that much more seamless? And the truth is, people, when they want something, they want it now. I mean, my generation and the students in high school now, they don't want to wait for a tutor to come to their home a few days later. When they want something, they want it now, and they want it on demand. And GradeSlam now is principle is to give you that tutor that you want right when you want it.
Almost sounds like you've created a human Google.
To a certain degree, you know, that's true. I mean, we sort of say when you're looking for something online, you might Google it, you're looking up an answer, you're going to get to maybe some tutorial videos, maybe an explanation somewhere, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get the answer to the question that you're actually trying to solve, you know, your homework. Maybe there's just one thing that's unclear. When you work one-on-one with an actual human, you're able to get that answer, you know, so it sort of does have that Google, answer ability.
Now, the service you're offering is 24/7, so I'm guessing you've got people working in different time zones to accommodate that.
That's right. I mean, our market is primarily North America, and so we have tutors from coast to coast. Obviously, if you go online at 4 or 5 a.m., it's going to be a little bit trickier to find somebody if you're looking for something very particular. But generally speaking, we do have people online around the clock. And the goal really is to make sure that there's always someone to meet your needs, similar to a lot of the other on-demand services that are out there. If you think of something like an Uber, you go on, busy time, you may not be able to get a driver immediately. You might have to wait a couple minutes. But that's really what we're trying to go for, is to make sure, hey, if you want somebody, you don't have to wait more than a minute or two. You know we're going to be able to make that connection right away.
Okay, so we'll talk in a few minutes about how people can use the service, but let's talk about the back end of it and how you found the people to tutor in the first place. How did you set that up?
So we work pretty closely with a lot of the universities around North America. Obviously, being here in Montreal, we work closely with McGill. It's a world-renowned university. Very strong, well-known education program as well. So we can recruit out of there. These are people who are either doing their master's in education. Some of them are doing their undergraduate, so they're going to be teachers soon. It gives us a pretty big bank of educators, and you can do that at the other top universities, Columbia. A lot of these schools have very well-known education programs, and we try and work with them to get people who have actually taught in the past.
So when did this service finally go national? When did it go online? I know you had a launch recently, but is it now available? Is it now up and running?
It is. It's live now. We launched actually on Tuesday, April 7th. So we rolled it out then. It's been in sort of beta test mode before that, getting everything ready, getting it organized and so on, testing it out, making sure that the bugs get fixed. And now we rolled it out, now that we're comfortable with everything, and it's been successful since its launch.
Okay, so let's talk about the other end, the user end. How do people use it? What does it cost? How does it work?
Sure. So it's really geared, and we focus as a business primarily on the K-12 market. So that's kindergarten to grade 12, and in Quebec, where we're based, that would include Cégep. Not so much on the higher ed side. So if you're doing your master's thesis or something on a very particular subject, probably be difficult to find the tutor for you. But what we try and focus on are the high school kids, elementary kids, those age ranges. So those are the typical users that are going to be coming to the site. Generally speaking, the way somebody ends up using our platform, they're going to need help with something, right? I mean, it's well known that tutors and tutoring has sort of been a booming industry in the last few years. When I was back in high school, the kids who used tutors were the kids that had 55s and needed to get 60s. That's no longer the case. I mean, the way things have gone, it's so competitive to get the post-secondary education
that you really need to focus. If you have an 85, you need to get a 90. And that really is the reality that a lot of these students face. So the people who are using us can have really any range of grades, but the people who are having trouble are students who are having trouble with a topic or their homework or getting ready for an exam. They're feeling some sort of stress or anxiety related to education.
And generally speaking, and I know you only just rolled it out, but are there some topics that are more prone to having tutors than others? What are the popular ones, for instance?
Sure. So in general, we usually say that the three subject areas that are most popular from a demand side are math, science, and languages. And I think that that probably is pretty obvious to most people. If you think back to your own education, generally speaking, people had difficulty with math or science or language-related stuff. So typically those are the three areas that are in the highest demand. I would say in terms of the tutor side, math and science, you can have a little bit of overlap. Languages, usually you'll have pretty specified criteria for the tutors. They'll either have done a background in linguistics or writing or English language arts, teaching, those type of things. Whereas math, it's a bit more open. Sometimes you'll have someone who did has a background in engineering. Sciences, it could be a wide range, microbiology, things of that nature.
And what does it cost to use GradeSlam now?
So it's billed by the minute. It costs $25 per hour, so that's 41 cents a minute. And the platform is actually free. We're giving it away with some free credits until April 20th. So anybody who goes on the site can use a promo code and actually get the session for free. So they can try it out at no cost. And most people, believe it or not, once they try it once, they're hooked. I mean, you'll never go back to the old style of booking a tutor when you know you don't have to go through the process of scheduling and trying to coordinate everything with another person. When it's ready, when you want it, everybody likes that.
It sounds like a win-win situation in that it's going to hook up a lot more tutors with a lot more people who need tutors. And as you described earlier, a lot of the tutors are people who are graduate students, people who are themselves going to be teaching one day. So it seems to be like a win-win for both sides.
That's right. And the goal behind it really is to facilitate this connection, right? And to make tutoring and supplementary education, which is sort of this umbrella for tutoring, accessible to students everywhere. You know, our goal was to eliminate any of the limitations that students would normally face. Obviously, one of those is the time constraints, right? If you're at home at 10:30 on a Sunday night and you have a test first period on Monday, well, it's very difficult for you to find that help. Whereas with our technology, you can just go online anytime and get the help. So the time constraints and things of that nature are sort of eliminated. Geographically, there's no constraints either. It's the students in Chicago. They don't need to find a tutor that's in Chicago. They can find a tutor that's here in Montreal. It doesn't really matter where the tutor or the student are. So we're really trying to make it a lot more accessible to everybody. And finally, from a financial standpoint, billing by the minute at a rate of $25 an hour, if anybody's used a tutor, knows it's extremely cheap. You're paying only for the time that you're using the tutor. So if you have one question, you just need to get something clarified. Maybe it takes 5, 10, 15 minutes. You're paying a few dollars. It's not going to break the bank.
And I know you say you just rolled it out right now, and you're primarily looking at North America, but do you have any idea where most of the people who are using the service are located?
So from the tutor side, our tutors are almost exclusively in – actually, they are exclusively in North America. We have a lot here from Montreal because that's where we're headquartered. We interview each one of the tutors individually, so that obviously makes it a little bit easier. But from the student side, they're really spread out across Canada and the U.S. I mean, we've got students from coast to coast. Obviously, the cities that have larger populations will have a larger presence. New York, Los Angeles tend to be two that have quite a bit of demand. And that goes without saying that the bigger the market, the more students are going to be coming from there.
Well, congratulations on a great idea. People can find out more information by going to the website, which is gradeslam.org. That's gradeslam.org. Philip, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program.
Not a problem. Thank you so much. And before I go, I'll give you guys the promo code
So if anybody does want to go on the site, they'll be able to use it for free. There's no cost associated with it to try it out. And that promo code is GSNOW20. GSNOW20. The number 20.
GSNOW20. Philip, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you so much. All the best.
Philip Cutler, founder and CEO of Grade Slam. Again, that promo code he mentioned was GSNOW20. That's GSNOW20. And you can use it at their website at gradeslam.org. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0295, and you'll find the link.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about mental health, plus we'll meet the creator of a new app called Incubate, which lets you send messages up to 25 years into the future. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, The Smarter Way to Listen to Radio. Well, it's not always a good thing when families go into business together. On February 9th, a single traffic stop in Alderson, West Virginia, resulted in the arrest of six people from the same family trafficking in stolen power tools, including one man who had traded a leaf blower, hedge trimmer, and weed trimmer for Percocet pills. However, a month later, members of an even more charming family were caught in raids in Elyria, Ohio. Officers from three jurisdictions arrested 34 people, all related to each other, in connection with a $400,000 drug operation. Gee, with so many arrests on the same family, is there anybody left who can post bail? Wow. Moving on to Denmark, several theaters in that country reported in March that they had begun adding subtitles to Danish language films because so many customers complained that the dialogue was incomprehensible. Apparently, it is widely known that spoken Danish is harder to understand than the written word, but Copenhagen's website, The Local, reported that actors had rebelled at improving their diction, claiming that their mumbling adds realism to the films. Yeah, I guess the actor's desire to mumble also removes the need to adequately learn lines. Yeah. And we have a couple of stories that highlight the impatience of some criminals. Number one, surveillance cameras revealed a man with a gun inside the Circle K in Palm Bay, Florida on January 31st. Now, since the clerk was in the back with the cash register locked, the man decided to wait for him for 17 seconds. according to the video anyway, but then impatiently fled empty-handed. And number two, according to a February Ormond Beach, Florida police report, 26-year-old Matthew Simeone handed a holdup note, implying that he was armed, to a SunTrust bank teller who walked away to get the money. Simeone grew weary of waiting and left empty-handed, but was arrested minutes later. And that, folks, is why patience is a virtue. Yes. Moving right along, U.S. Army Sergeant First Class Gregory McQueen, who was 39 years of age, showed no emotion as he was sentenced to 24 months in prison, reduction in rank to private, and a dishonorable discharge after he pleaded guilty to 15 charges surrounding a prostitution ring that he ran at Fort Hood, Texas. The charges included working with another soldier to recruit lower-ranking female soldiers into the ring, and recruiting one woman who allegedly became one of McQueen's GI hookers to buy diapers for her baby. The sentencing ended McQueen's 21-year career and removed him from his position as, wait for it, a sexual assault victim advocate. Yeah, because nobody can advocate for a victim like an abuser, right? Talk about leading by example. Not. And while the owner of a house in Mahwah, New Jersey, worked to secure a permit to tear it down, workers were brought in to dismantle the interior. They were salvaging wires and things, said Mahwah Police Department's arson investigator, Sergeant Michael Blondin. All of the utilities had been turned off, so the workers lit a fire in the house's fireplace to get warm. But the house was in bad shape and the chimney apparently wasn't intact. When the local fire department arrived in response to calls for help, flames were shooting out of the windows, and it had to call in help from firefighters in two neighboring cities. The house was destroyed. Destroyed. Well, the good news is the owner doesn't need a demolition permit now. Also, the better news, the workers got plenty warm, didn't they? And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Tracy Gauthier, a teacher at Skyline High School in Longmont, Colorado, posted a photo of a student on Instagram captioning it, "STEM kids are trying too hard. I don't know him, but I hate him. Hashtag pothead, hashtag STEM, hashtag wannabe cool, hashtag dorky white boy." When the student, freshman Phoenix Bowen, learned of the public online post, he replied, "You can't hate me. You don't know me." Gauthier almost immediately responded, "I know I don't know you, but I can hate anyone I'd like. Hashtag no big, hashtag don't be sad, hashtag mean art teacher." The boy is particularly upset about being labeled a pothead. He says he doesn't use marijuana. Eric Bowen, Phoenix's father, asked the school to fire the teacher. "This is bullying," he said. "This is a lot of lines crossed." School officials say Gauthier is no longer a teacher in the district, but won't say if she had been fired or resigned. It's probably time she left high school anyway, since she never grew up in the first place. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? The recent German Wings tragedy, where it is alleged that the co-pilot intentionally crashed the jet he was flying into the French Alps, has brought mental health onto the front pages. This can both help and hurt the issue of talking about it. On the line with us right now is Lynetta Williams. She is a licensed psychotherapist, and she joins us from Washington, D.C. Hi, Lynetta.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on the program with us. This is a situation that is a serious topic to discuss, especially considering what's been happening in the news lately. As I mentioned in the introduction, we've been hearing the story about the German Wings tragedy, and it's shining a light, and not a positive light, on the issues of mental health. First of all, your thoughts on that situation and how it's been covered by the press.
Well, I think right now we're hearing a very linear narrative. And I think when we talk about mental health, we have to start to encourage a lot of different ways of approaching this, because it can feel very heavy, and we can start to stigmatize people when they start to come out and say that they have depression. And that's exactly what the co-pilot expressed as we look back and we're taking this journey through his life and trying to peel back the layers to really understand what depression means. I think we have to be very sensitive and know that sometimes people do actions that aren't explainable. And I think that if we only look at this through a mental health lens, it starts to add to that language of stigma.
You talk about the idea that that he had issues in discussing it with his employers. The news of this coming out and the way it's been talked about, is it not going to make more people be leery of talking to their employers about any potential mental health issues they're having?
I agree. I wholeheartedly, and I say that that's why I think as we approach the topic, we have to make sure that we're taking a holistic view, because people will suffer from mental health at some point in their life. The statistics say that there's about 3 to 5% of Americans that will suffer some type of mental illness. 10% of those Americans from studies will have a severe mental illness. So we talk about major depression, bipolarism, psychosis. And I think that as we're talking about this, we also are talking about the workplace. And we know that there's so many different dynamics that take place with work ethics. We talk about burnout. And I think as we're talking about employers and confidentiality, we also have to be very leery that for pilots, in my understanding, the German pilot had a physical and had a previous history of mental health. However, I think that we want to make sure that we're sensitive when we talk about disclosure and how people have language that makes them feel safe and inclusive, because there's a lot of people that have mental health issues, but we don't want them to feel like they have to stay in the shadows and they're going to be ostracized once they come out. We want this to be a very supportive network and that we all have the same linguistics and the literacy around how we can support loved ones and colleagues that are suffering from mental health illnesses.
And just because someone has or had a mental health issue doesn't necessarily mean they can't do particular jobs, correct?
Oh, that's exactly. That's correct. And I think that there's a lot of people that are able to, you know, go on the job and they manage their medication, they manage their mental health interventions. It might be with counseling, but all of those things are helpful.
Now, what are the different stages of mental illness?
Well, I think that there are a lot of different stages, and it's fair for me to say as a psychotherapist that different types of mental illnesses have different types of progression. So it's not always, it's fragile for some people, and other spaces it's also something that happens in different doses. So it might be causal. It might be something that your trauma has induced. So if you're in an abusive situation, it can be something that reminds you of that trauma, and it might re-engage that mental health issue, if that makes sense. So sometimes it can be fragile and sometimes it can be episodic. It can be something that actually happens to you that makes you have to remember that.
I think when it comes to talking about the German Wings tragedy, there's another thing that has to be brought up, and the fact that due to mental illness, if someone is suicidal, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're homicidal. Those are two different things, aren't they?
Yes, and I think that this was a time where we're starting to find that intersection with both. And since he didn't leave a suicide note, and since so many lives were lost, and that's always tragic. And I just want to say to the families, members of those people, that my heart goes out to them, because it is a lot when things happen that the intersection of suicide and homicide come together.
I know this is a hypothetical, and I'm asking you to put yourself in that particular pilot situation, and it's something we can't do. But given your educational background, as you since mentioned, there was no suicide note. Do you suspect that something like this was premeditated or a spur of the moment?
Well, you know, it's always hard to make those judgment calls. And from what I've gathered and what some of the facts are stating is that this is someone who quietly had a doctor's note and was told to stay home from work. So with that, knowing that information, and then with listening to some of the information that we've heard about the black box and him not opening the door, it seems like he had some type of plan there. And it's always tragic because he lost his life and took hundreds of other lives with him. So it seems like he did have a purpose in that. And that part can be scary. And I think that leads us to ask about assessment, and it asks us to want to ask more questions around mental health questions. And for me, it also made me think about
also requiring a neurological assessment, because not only do you need the physical assessment before you file a claim, but you also need to be able to mentally be cognitive. And there's so many other factors, and burnout is a high risk for pilots, especially when they're taking different tours.
Generally speaking, from a public's point of view, how does mental illness awareness have to get better?
I think our first thing that we all can do is start to build literacy. I think that building literacy and understanding, even if it's just going online, reading something about mental health, April is Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. And I think under that, as you're getting to know your physical health a little bit better, we can also explore just what is bipolarism? What is depression? We hear different terms. There's so many different resources online that you're able to tap into, but it's very applicable to be able to start there. I think the second thing we have to do is also respect people when they do come out and let us know that they have a mental illness, and be very hypersensitive to some of the language that we use. Sometimes we throw around slurs. It might be the word crazy, or she's crazy, or she's bipolar. That puts us in that slippery slope where people start to back up, and we never see our family and loved ones that do have this. So I think the first step is really building literacy. And the second thing is just watching our language. How do we talk to our colleagues, because you never know who is suffering from something, especially at work or in your home life.
And in your home life, is there anything people, parents, family members should be concerned about when it comes to early warning signs of potential mental illness?
Well, I think when we talk about mental illness, it's a broad stroke. I think when we are looking at instances where people are losing their lives and suicide has some very clear warning signs that I think that we can grasp onto. When you see people that are suffering from insomnia, either they're not able to go to sleep or they're sleeping too much. Also, you might see people that are going up and down with their weight loss. That can be another sign. So I think that if on the ground level, what you can do is start with your primary care physician. If you're unsure, if you're not certain if you have a mental illness, that's the first line of defense. You can always ask to speak to someone when you're at your primary care physician for a physical.
And people can find out more information about you, by the way, by checking out your website, which is LynettaWilliams.com, correct?
We'll actually just update our website. So you can actually find us at AFamilySolutions.com. So we're trying to make it a little easier for you.
AFamilySolutions.com.
Yes.
Great. Thank you very, very much, Lynetta, for being on the program with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Psychotherapist Lynetta Williams. Again, you can check out her website at afamilysolutions.com. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0295, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. How many times have you been robbed by a convicted felon? You may be surprised to learn it's more often than you think. Even if you've never been held up at gunpoint by a thief, there are prisoners robbing you right now as a taxpayer. Convicted felons file a shocking number of frivolous lawsuits every year. According to the Federal Administrative Office of the Courts, prisoner lawsuits reached an all-time high in 2014. For the first time, the number of civil lawsuits filed by prisoners in federal court exceeded 60,000 cases. Let's be fair. If the federal government doesn't crack down on this problem, we'll hear more about prisoners like the Arizona inmate who filed 3,613 lawsuits last year, all by himself. Most of his lawsuits were about the quality of his food, and every one was dismissed. In the meantime, the money spent defending all of us against these lawsuits could be used for better roads, health care, or even tax cuts. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the creator of the app Incubate. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on. On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But we have a few more Stuffball news stories to share with you before we get to our next guest. The Klein Avenue Bridge is marked with numerous barricades, including orange barrels and cones, large wood signs stating road closed with orange striped markings. This according to Patricia Van Til, and she is speaking on behalf of the Lake County, Indiana Sheriff's Department. But there is no Klein Avenue Bridge. You see, in 2013, Indiana spent $9 million getting it demolished. And a sign and a concrete barrier had been moved, even though the signs and barriers are checked weekly, a state transportation department spokesperson said. It seems Iftikhar Hussein's GPS told him to drive over the bridge, and he obeyed, driving around the barriers. But of course, as I said earlier, there is no bridge. So the 64-year-old made a downturn at the end of the road and proceeded 37 and a half feet while accelerating rapidly toward the earth. Because, as I said, there is no bridge. He was able to get out of the car, but it ignited, and his 51-year-old wife, Zora, was burned to death. Hussein wasn't the first to pass the barricades. Scott Green said he stopped within 4 feet of the edge after driving around the barriers. He had found the bridge on a map. Okay. Why are people handing over their brains to a GPS instead of using common sense? When you see a road barrier, that's a sign to not go any further. But hey, I'm not exonerating the community completely. I mean, you spent $9 million to tear down the bridge. Don't you think you could have spent a few more bucks to make the road to it impassable, or better yet, remove it completely? You think? Wow. And one more story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuffball program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. A blind man has told a French court that it was he, not his guide dog, who bit a dope dealer selling him real grass rather than the stuff that gets you stoned. I bit him. My dog didn't do it. Guide dogs are not attack dogs. That's what was reported in a French daily as quoting the unnamed man. The lawn seller, as the newspaper dubbed the dealer, was sentenced to 4 months in jail for hitting the blind man. He will serve his jail sentence at home with an electronic bracelet. Talk about taking a bite out of crime, huh? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuffball program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? What if you could send a message into the future? Who would you send it to, and what would you say? Though we may be in an age where Snapchat holds court with the instant gratification crowd, a futuristic alternative has just hatched called Incubate. The new app allows users to send video, text, or photo messages to friends, family, significant others up to 25 years into the future or as quickly as a few minutes from now. Founder Michael McClooney says the app could change the way we communicate with one another. And Michael is on the line with us right now from Georgia. Hi, Michael.
How are you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for doing this. So how did this idea come up of creating Incubate?
It came from listening to a very good friend of mine whose wife had just had triplets, and his life was very, very hectic, to say the least. And he was relaying to me some very hilarious stories. Well, I thought they were hilarious. They were, pretty brutal for him. But I was actually encouraging him to capture these moments for his kids and for his loved ones and things like that. And once they were, far enough into the future that his kids could understand and appreciate these things, their 16th birthday, 18th birthday, 21st birthday, things like that, they were 3 months at the time, to take those things and share them. And he just simply expressed that life was way too hectic to be able to, track that and keep up with that. But that if he could capture those moments instantly and send them to the future, knowing that his kids would get them one day, that would change his life. And so that was the initial kernel of the idea, and we took that and grew it into what it is today.
So exactly how does Incubate work?
So Incubate requires both the sender and recipient to have the application. That way, if you get a new device, you get a new phone number, wherever you go in the world, any mobile device in the world, you can log into with your Incubate credentials, so that's just a username and password, and still get your messages. So what it does is you just log in, and again, very simply, you just create your content. It can be a text, it can be an audio message, it can be a picture, or it can be a video. You create the message, you simply select a friend, yourself, a friend, family member, or multiple family members or friends, and then you go to the next screen. You select, again, very, very simply, a day and a time, and at that day and time, that message will hatch for both the sender and the recipients.
So how long ago, first of all, did you start Incubate?
We started developing it in January of 2014. We got to something that we could start testing with internally in August of 2014, and we actually just went live on March 4th.
Now, I said in the introduction, up to 25 years into the future, how did you decide upon a time limit? Like, why not 5, why not 10, why not 50?
So we went out and spoke with people, and 25 just really seemed to kind of capture the imagination. If we started looking 50 or 100 years in the future, that was just almost too much for people to really be able to wrap their minds around. 25 is still really captures the imagination, but it's something that we just realized was about the largest number that people could still comprehend in their head and wrap their minds around.
So 25 is the maximum. I said you could send it as recently as in a few moments from now. In actually using Incubate and actually running Incubate, what do you find the norm is?
Right now we're getting a lot of messages either within the next couple days or to a year, 2 years, 3 years, that kind of range. We are getting then just a fair number of people sending things 25 years out just because they want to send something that far. But we've seen things normalize either in the real short term, and then later that day they want someone to get a message at a specific time to remind them to do something exactly at 4 o'clock or something. So we get a lot of intraday messages, but then also some that are just several years out.
I was about to ask, do you find that a lot of people are using this almost like a personal agenda as a reminder to themselves?
Absolutely. And so it's not just reminders to themselves, but also when they have other people that they need to coordinate with. They can, if they need somebody to do something today at 4 o'clock, they can just simply send a text that person will get it, say 3:58, that would remind them, because everyone knows they have their phone on them. If you try to, send an email at that time or something like that, you may get it and you may not, but everybody always has their phone on them, so you schedule that message for 3:58. You need to do XYZ at 4 o'clock, and that's been working really well for people.
There are a lot of people out there who create new apps, but a lot of them don't come from an app background. What is your background before you created Incubate?
So I've been a serial entrepreneur ever since I graduated college from the University of Georgia. So I actually helped run a real estate company and then also a corporate prep brokerage beforehand. So I had an entrepreneurship background, but absolutely no tech experience. So it's been quite the experience.
Now, the friend you were referring to had triplets. Has he signed up for Incubate?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And so we even have a feature called the nursery. What the nursery allows people to do is actually create accounts for people that aren't old enough to have mobile devices yet. And so he's actually set up an account for each of his triplets so that he can take and send those messages to them so that whenever they do get old enough for mobile devices, he can download Incubate for them, sign up with those user credentials, and then they will have all those messages that he's been sending them over the years, and they will begin to get them when the hatch date is reached.
Now, one thing that people are concerned about these days with modern technology as it is security. I mean, especially if considering, let's use your friend as an example. He's sending his messages to his triplets. They might be very personal to his triplets, and he might not want the world to know what he's saying or thinking about their growing up and their development. How do you secure the messages?
So all the messages are private. They're one-on-one. So again, there's nothing public about them. A recipient could take and share a message publicly. The messages don't disappear or anything like they do with Snapchat. We want people to have keepsakes if it is a deep and meaningful message. But again, we keep everything secure on our servers, and it's all private, and it only goes to the intended recipient. There's no public access.
How does one get their hands on Incubate, and is there a cost to it?
So it's completely free. Currently, we are only for Apple devices, so you can just go to the App Store. We have our Android product in beta test right now, and we hope that within several weeks that will be in the Google Play Store. But if you just go to the App Store, whether you have an iPhone or an iPad or an iPod Touch, you can go to the App Store and you can download Incubate, and it's completely free.
How long has Incubate been out?
So we went into our full launch on March 4th.
And how widespread have you found your clients? Are people buying the app in other countries, or is it just right now predominantly North America or just the United States?
So we turned it on initially just in the United States. We wanted to make sure we could manage what was coming in. Within about 48 hours, we had been contacted from over 40 countries. So we've now turned it live in Canada. And we are looking at the next phase of countries we're going to turn it live in. We just want to make sure that we grow at a manageable rate. But again, we've been hit up from all across the globe with people that are interested. So we're very excited about that.
And in your wildest dreams, was this what you anticipated it would do, or has it been bigger than what you thought, or are you on track to where your goals were?
There's been a lot of very positive press just because of the types of meaningful messages people send. And, we hoped for this. It's hard to say you expect that. So it's been very, very nice and pleasant. But, this is what we hoped for, but it's hard to say that we expected this type of reception once we launched.
It sounds like a great idea and a personal idea. Have you got a corporate model for it? And the reason why I say that, it could also be, from a corporate point of view, a sort of business time capsule.
Absolutely. So we are actually working through different models right now to open it up for business to consumer type applications. So those are things that we're working through and we're looking at. Again, we've had people contact us on that front that are very, very interested in pursuing those types of ideas. So those are things that we are working through. We've had lots of people come to us with lots of ideas. And again, we just want to make sure we get a stabilized foundation under us, but we are moving forward internally, looking through those ideas and trying to flesh out exactly what we want to do on that front, because that is something we are going to do.
People can find out more information by going to your website, which is myincubate.com.
Yeah, I was going to say myincubate.com, yes.
Excellent. Michael, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us, and congratulations on the success of your new app called Incubate.
Thank you so much for having me.
Michael McClooney, creator of the new app, Incubate. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0295, and you'll find the links to the app. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Police in Washington State say they busted an alleged robber with an unwise prop, a canvas bag printed with a dollar sign. The Olympia Police Department said officers responded to a report of a robbery at a Subway restaurant on the west side of the city, and employees told investigators the suspect indicated he had a weapon in his pocket and left with money from the cash register and a worker's cell phone. The workers told police the man, who wore a red bandana over his face, told them not to, quote, do anything funny. The man, who employees say fled with a shopping cart, was located near the grocery outlet. Police said he was pushing a shopping cart loaded with consumer goods and was carrying $100 in cash and a cell phone matching the description of the device taken from the Subway worker. The man also had a white canvas bag with it printed on it, a dollar sign, and that was tied to his pants. 22-year-old David Lingefelter was arrested on charges of robbery and obstructing. Okay. You know I have to ask the question. I mean, unless you're robbing the vault of Scrooge McDuck, why, oh why, would you be carrying around a canvas sack with a big dollar sign on it while in the process of a robbery? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0295. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0295. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.